Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. Only this edition is unlike any other edition going before because it's the first time we've gathered in the year 2017. Last time we talked about looking back. Now we have a chance to look around and see what, after the New Year's has arrived, what's happening, and also looking a bit to the future. There have been a number of events. Just today, it was announced, for example, in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, the airport, there has been a shooting with a number of people that were killed, others that were wounded, in an example of perhaps another form of, is it terrorism? Is it just a lone shooter? What's happening? But that's sort of punctuated the moment. But we have had our own issues and concerns raised about crime and criminal activity here in the Valley. Zaz, I think you attended a meeting that was also well attended by others that was focusing on criminal activity and perhaps responses to it. Would you give a quick summary about that?
Yeah, it was a meeting held by Representative Mark Newman and Representative-elect Colleen Sullivan Leonard to follow up on one that they both held when Colleen was a Wasilla City Councilor in 2013. Back then, it was to focus on property crimes, and it was more sparsely attended than the event Wednesday night, which was, at first it was just a few people there, and then by the starting time rolled around, there was at least 150 people. They had to open another room up on one of the Menard meeting rooms to hold everybody. A very interested crowd, a lot of high-level public safety officials, the head of the troopers, Walt Monaghan, a number of troopers, the police chiefs from Wasilla and Palmer. And basically the upshot was, in terms of the crime rate, we aren't kind of contrary to, I think, what most of us think or at least see. Crime is not, spiking. We aren't, at least statistically, the troopers and the police departments, at least Palmer says, are not seeing a tremendous rise even in property crimes. But there are fewer law enforcement out amongst a growing population. And so call volumes per capita, I guess, I'm not sure if that would be accurate, but call volumes are up. And there are fewer troopers on the streets and the highways and the roads and the back roads and the backcountry to handle them. And so that's kind of it was a long, fairly dense meeting. But the upshot was sort of counterintuitively, crime isn't up, but there are far fewer boots on the ground than there should be. And I should say, I didn't get into this in the story that I wrote, but there's a problem with funding, but there's also a problem with recruitment. The troopers have open positions right now that aren't being filled because they don't have people to fill them.
Oh. So I know that locally, you mentioned the Palmer Chief of Police, and coming up this next week or next Wednesday, there's going to be an event at the Palmer Depot, which is intended to bring to the fore the opportunity to do neighborhood watch, something that maybe many of us have experienced in the past in other places. It's been around a bit here, and this is one of the examples. And I think it goes parallel with what's happening. I just noticed a reference to a group in Anchorage creating a 501c3 involving a police department and community members in order to ensure that there is good bilateral bidirectional communication between the police department and the citizenry of the city. Anchorage has had a record this past year of 30-some-odd murders and a very concerned neighborhood set in some cases. And it looks as if people are saying, yes, you can hire more police, but bottom line, the relationship between police departments mm-hmm. and communities is really the a key here.
Zaz, I have a question. If Anchorage just graduated a bunch of new police officers, they're really ramping up their forces. Is there a reason that they are able to recruit and the state troopers out here aren't?
I'm not sure, Terry. I think that what I've heard kind of anecdotally is that to be a trooper, not that being an Anchorage police officer is easy, but there's a more kind of unpredictability. You know, you may be first on scene in Caswell, and nobody is there to help you for a while. And you're kind of doing everything. Traffic control, you know, scene control, investigation, maybe some medical assistance until responders can get there. And that there's also apparently an issue with benefits traveling with you. So you, there's not a lot of retention. I guess there's some issues with retention over time. And then the issues with different post assignments around the state. And I'm not sure what the requirements are, but, you know, certainly, you know, coming up from down south to work in Alaska is one thing. And I think, for some people, appealing, but, you know, living in the Bullion versus living in Anchorage are two very different lifestyles. And if you have a family, et cetera.
And how about the pay?
I haven't done a personally. I haven't done a comparison, so I can't speak to that.
I know that one of the tendencies with the troopers over a lengthy period of time is, as you suggested, you're going to be moving around. Anchorage is a big city, but even if your patrol and duties change over time, you're still in Anchorage. But when you have a family, say, and you're going to be posted maybe to Nome, another place well removed from where you are, that's a change in lifestyle more akin to a military life. And that may be a factor.
I wonder if this is one of the things we're starting to see play out because of the loss of defined benefits and that, you know, what our competitive edge is now to even some other states where people are weighing that out because, you know, retirement is definitely on everybody's mind. And there's been even some recent stories about the fact that even the crafter of the 401k, so to speak, way of doing things is admitting that wasn't probably the best way to go about things. So I wonder if that's playing into it. What do you think, Mark?
I don't know. I am curious, though, back to the meetings, Oz. How serious was the talk of a borough-wide police force?
It was, I mean, it wasn't the focus. It was sort of the backstory, I guess. You know, there was a James Cockrell, who's head of troopers, basically said, you know, we've kind of reached a breaking point here, and if we keep bleeding funding and you know, and staffing, then, you know, local governments, either existing police forces are going to have to expand or municipalities like Mat-Su are going to have to come up with their own law enforcement. And that's come, I mean, the idea of having a sheriff here has been around since I've been reporting on Mat-Su for 15 years. You know, it certainly isn't the first time that has come up because, I mean, it's even with full staffing, it's a lot of area to cover for the troopers. And so it's not very efficient. But there are all kinds of issues with, you know, the second-class borough and law enforcement authority and voters here. I think our demographics are changing, but, you know, we'd have to tax ourselves most likely, and those votes don't tend to go well.
And at the same time that you were over there in Wasilla, Terrier in Palmer, where there was another meeting going on, and this one had a panel of legislators and some people in the audience. How about a quick summary of that, Terry?
Yeah, I think we were at dueling meetings, I heard, Zaz, at least that's...
Yeah, I was surprised that Shelley Hughes scheduled hers that same night.
Well, but the talk from the Palmer side was that Mark Newman Group did theirs last minute, that this one actually was advertised back in November, so there you go. But there was a couple of comments by legislators about that. Everybody that was advertised to show up there, other than Senator Dunleavy, did show up. In fact... the Valley legislators, including David Wilson, Shelley Hughes, Delina Johnson, George Rauscher, and Kathy Tilton, and Shelley Hughes, who sort of ran the meeting. Dan Sadler showed up, and even Amy Dembowski showed up at the inn. Yeah. And ex-legislator, soon to be ex-legislator, Liz Vasquez. So it was sort of an interesting mix of people. Lynn Gaddis, ex-senator wannabe, I guess. Lynn Gaddis was there, so it wasn't as big a crowd as normally I see at those things, although there were still 35 testifiers. They ran it a lot better than they normally have run those things, I thought. They actually gave limited people to 3 minutes, and they held most people's feet to the fire on that. But they did make it into a listening session and only spoke at the very end about their thoughts on going down to Juneau. But... You know, I'm glad this is the last chance that people will get a chance to see them. Most of them indicated they were taking off this weekend or shortly after to Juneau. So people are still wanting to be heard on the budget and moving forward.
So, look, Terry, you went through those names. Was there any member of the House coalition at that meeting?
Well, none of the Valley delegation is on the bipartisan coalition.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
And there was no one else who came by who might have been.
No. I understand that Anchorage is going to have a town hall meeting, and most of those are in that area. It's not that often. It was rather odd to even see Representative Sadler here. I don't know that I've ever seen him at a town hall meeting. And maybe that means he's not going to show up at the one that's normally in Anchorage. I don't know.
Did anybody address the challenge of implementing ideas from the minority?
No, but I think there's a few of them made comments that they recognize the fact they are in the minority this year, but they're still going to push hard to get their ideas out there. I was surprised to hear Representative Sadler, who doesn't seem to me to be much of a compromise guy, talk about the fact they were going to have to compromise this year. I indicate that's sort of maybe a good sign. They talked about a few bills they want to see. I was glad to see several people. I was really glad to see that seven people spoke in support of a smoke-free workplace law. That was great. And there was also a number of people that stood up and said, you have to get a handle on health care. And they gave a lot of stories about what it had cost. They didn't have any indication how, but that. And this is the first really town hall. I've been sort of surprised that they even talked about health care a little bit. And they all made a little bit of references to it. Apparently, Shelley Hughes is talking about a bill about transparency and medical costs that she thinks might help the competition factor. And also getting rid of conditional assessments for the skilled nursing. Getting rid of that. So they are looking at it. Representative Tilton told a story about picking up her own prescription drug and how she had to compare prices because they were so expensive. And she acknowledged the fact she's on state insurance. So good to see that get a nod, because that certainly to me has always been overlooked in any discussion that they've had.
And so was anybody at the Dunleavy meeting?
Yeah. Zaz, did you go to that one?
Nope.
Me either.
Okay, we'll have to find a source.
Was there anybody even reported on it? I didn't even see anything reported on it today.
I haven't seen anything.
I will say at this meeting that I went to that almost every legislator, other than I think Delana Johnson, maybe, I don't remember her saying anything, but almost all of them, maybe Kathy Tilton too, made some reference to them taking a hard look at what Dunleavy is proposing. There was, it should be noted, there was absolutely no love in the room by the legislators for Governor Walker taking the PFD. I don't think, other than Delana Johnson, who didn't really make much of a comment, but several of them commented on that was the wrong way to go. And that would make sense in support of Dunleavy on that.
Well, okay. Well,
although no good ideas on what to do as an alternative. That theme of cutting more is certainly there by those legislators.
It is there big time. George Rauscher commented on the announcement about the Dunleavy meeting, you know, how wrong it was to take the PFD, and we've got to cut government, cut, cut, cut. No specifics still. So, yeah, that sentiment is still out there, but it still does not seem to be backed up by anything constructive and forward-thinking.
Well, sir, I know that both of these meetings were local focused. Any mention whatsoever of the national level events, any allusions, et cetera? Well, let me do a
I would say that there, maybe it was Rauscher, I don't remember what, somebody made some indication that that they thought that it was going to be easier for mineral development with the new administration, that they're hopeful that that the resources could be developed. But that was really the only thing. Nobody brought anything up about the ACA and what impact that could have to our state with 20 million people not in the whole country not getting, and a big percentage of them for Alaska not having health care anymore. And health care is actually one of the bright spots, it sounds like, in our state economy, that and tourism. And that could take a hit, too, in a time that we can't take a hit.
Well, then let me just give you a brief comment or two, because I last week was privilege to be able to get to Washington, D.C., to be there on a day when it was 60 degrees, very unusual for this time of year. And I was able to wander by a number of institutions in the city itself, as well as doing a visit to Monticello, Jefferson's place. And I have to say that in the quick summary that Monticello and Jefferson represent maybe the extreme end of a incredible, long-lasting participation by an individual in the society, not only because he happened to have been president, but because if you went down into the details, as the wonderful museum there and many, many books and studies have been done about his life, whatever the particular things someone may have about one or another aspect of what he did, he was a thoughtful guy. And I think that was helpful in particular because as I invited people to comment in Washington, D.C. about the president-elect, who seems in some respects not to practice many of those disciplines of reading extensively and writing and is taking advantage of the technology we have to tweet prior to becoming president, and is getting a bit of a pushback. And I think that was the sense I had that Washington is a big place. There are big, big buildings that are filled with people and processes that have been developed in order to do what is a very, very complex business of having a country of 300 million people. It just doesn't happen because everybody knows the right thing to do, et cetera. There's a lot of coordination in that's required. And I think the recent events in Congress seem to also suggest that the quicker you move to do something, the quicker you have to step back and realize that you haven't thought through the implications and ripples. A recent action by a portion of the House regarding an ethics committee is instructive, I think. There's a reason why people talk to one another both within a Congress and outside of Congress. There's a reason why there are longer hearings. And the sense I had coming away is sometimes we look at a bureaucracy and its weight and we say, oh, it's in the way of doing things. I want to do this, that, or whatever. But there's an also perhaps a counterbalancing appropriateness in taking things carefully as you think about what you're going to do. So I came away noticing in particular that there's a lot of work already being done to set up for the inauguration, which will happen on a Friday. There are stands that are being built and reviewing stands in a lot of different places. There are police presence already and in anticipation of a large number of people coming. Washington has been through this before, and you have police of all sorts that are going to be available to ensure the safety of whoever is going to be at the inauguration. But one of the events that I understand is going to happen, it seems to be gathering some steam, if you will, is a women's march that will occur the day after inauguration. And my understanding is that there is also some of planning for similar marches here in Alaska. Do you have any knowledge of any of those?
I know Anchorage and Palmer are planning them.
Right.
They've been Facebooking about them. So.
Zaz, anything?
No, I haven't heard anything.
Okay. Well, they're both, I've been getting more and more information about the fact that they are occurring, how big they're going to be, what effect they'll have, particularly the one in Washington. I don't know. But it seems that the city is preparing for perhaps a different kind of inauguration. Inaugurations past have had occasional reactions against what has just happened by electing a certain person as president. This one may be a little bit more turbulent, but the city itself is a very experienced place. If you talk to a cab driver, if you talk to people anywhere around, they've seen a lot, and they have survived in many ways. So that's this general tone I think I would take away. Mark?
Was there any other, noticeable you know, changes in tone or just the air, you know, from other times you visited?
Well, I would say this. I'd start with one thing. In my naivete, I thought that I would go to D.C. and very often, we go to visit museums, and there's a new black museum. Well, that one, it requires a couple of months in advance in order to be able to get inside. You can go outside, and you can see it, and it's a very interesting structure. It's very different. And I have spoken to people who validate the articles describing that it takes more than an hour or a short time to experience the inside of the building. And in fact, one person said she had to do this 2 days. She had to break it up because it was so powerful experience, the structure itself. And I have to also, if many of you and many listeners may have been in Washington. And when we talk about museums in Washington, they're at another level. they are engaging, and I was reminded in visiting a few others of the thought and the quality of what's there, so that when you walk in, it's not walking from room to room to say, okay, here's another picture of this, but a very, very, very different kind of engaged presence. At least that was what I felt and what I noticed many other people were doing. I would also say, though, that I did walk by the old post office a few blocks from the White House, where Mr. Trump has leased space for a hotel. And it's not, there were certainly people milling about just as tourists visiting Pennsylvania Avenue in front of the White House. But there weren't many people milling around the hotel itself. In fact, the main entrance is not the main entrance. You don't enter there. You have to go around to the side. And there was a little bit of activity, but it wasn't a lot. And in the building itself, I don't know whether that's somewhat instructive, but this building's been there a long time. It wasn't built for this purpose. So it sits...
post office.
Yeah, big, but it's a tall, impressive building. And the lettering on the canopy above... the entrance, the side entrance where one would enter, isn't gold, but it's kind of small. It's not big, and I'm not sure whether that represents, you know, that there isn't a huge Trump on the front of this building.
Well, D.C. has rules.
Yeah. Oh, and that might be true. But I would come away and say that there are a lot of people that are, and it's witnessed by the traffic that continues to grow in D.C. who do a day's work, working for the government, working for other nonprofit organizations and organizations that are in there. I had lunch with someone who's involved with one of the environmental organizations, for example. And all of that work is going on, and it's a mesh. And it's not because of I come away saying that I didn't see government regulation. I saw people that had a particular career focus on an aspect of life that they had, in many cases, worked long at. And that's an important thing to remember. These are not faceless bureaucrats. Each one of these people has very often a family. They do other things other than just go into their cubicle and walk away. And I'm just reminded of all of that, I think, and I wanted to bring that back. Yes, Mark.
So was the wait for the new museum due to demand?
Yes, April.
April. Is the...
Yeah, if you wanted to go, if you're planning to go for the cherry blossom time, or you were planning to go, a good time to project to be able to get into that would be April.
Wow.
That's that's sort of normal, though, in some regards, I think, to other new exhibits and museums there, but this one... particularly has people been waiting for.
It stands apart from other buildings. It's a very, if you drive by, you can see it, and it is a unique structure. There are some other buildings that are somewhat modern, but this one, I would encourage people to take a look from what I've understood. So with that, I'd like to bring us back here to say that... it is 2017. The legislature will begin at the end toward the end of this month. But next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, all three bodies that we usually talk about, the City of Palmer, the Metsu Borough Assembly, and the Metsu Borough School District, will be meeting. Two of those bodies, the Assembly and the School Board, still have heavy lifting as they work on their budget and still are very much focused on what's happening in Juneau. My impression of the City of Palmer is it's a little more relaxed. They have done their budget. Yes, they're watching, they're doing things, but they're not in that same process. So before we finish, Zaz, have we missed anything that you'd like to speak about?
No. Watch your local ADN for a story about pets and traps. That's all I'll say about that.
Okay.
But there will be legislation on the borough level expected to be introduced. It hasn't made it to the Assembly yet, but it's making the rounds among boards. The school board got to look at it. Okay. That would restrict trapping on school grounds and off about 100 feet off crevasse marine trails.
How unreasonable.
Okay, Mark, any last comments here?
I'm just kind of dumbfounded that kind of thing requires a law, but...
Well, it's been brought up at the Assembly before, and it brings a lot of people out. They have a coalition of trappers that don't want any regulations, that's for sure. But I'll bet you some dog people out, too, this time.
Okay. And Terry, any other comments?
Nope. I think it's going to be a very interesting, combative, perhaps, year in Juneau. I'm sort of anxious to get down there the first time and just kind of get the tone of the room. But I think definitely it's going to be fast and furious, and we're going to have to watch. It was interesting to read Pete Kelly's comments in the ADN this morning that when he talked to resource development, and he's sort of eager to have a fight. So we'll see who's the adult in the room. Is it the bipartisan coalition, or is it actually the Senate who seems to think they are? So we'll see.
Yeah, quick hop on there. It is as important as ever for people to be engaged and to pay attention and to make their thoughts and opinions known to elected people.
Now, whatever you may think. Right. Well, thank you, Mark Kelsey, for coming in today.
You're welcome, Mike. Good to be here.
Thank you, Terry Snyder, for also coming in today.
Have a good weekend.
And thank you, Zaz Hollander, for taking the time to call in today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. That is the end of this edition of Valley Edition. We'll be back next week with another edition.